Alrighty, it's Eli and Izzy here in the afternoon. We are back to talk sports, things in general, nothing in specific, whatever is on our mind, whatever is on your mind. Izzy, how you doing today?
Hey, long time no speak, Eli. It's good to be back on the air. I mean, we've taken quite a hiatus. You know, we've been on some type of vacation, kind of like Alex Rodriguez's bat. You know, we haven't been in the lineup for quite some time. The difference is, at least I know I haven't been juicing. How about you? What have you been up to?
I should be juicing because I've been playing a lot of softball/baseball this summer, so I'm on the verge of juicing, but haven't right now. And wouldn't even juice for productivity because you can't help these skills that much. But I would just more so, I need to get that bat up a little bit, you know, hitting-wise and whatnot. But, you know, summer's coming to a close. It's been a nice summer, but I'm looking forward to the cool weather. Baseball's winding down. Football's starting up. Basketball, camp in a month. And, what do you think of your Yanks? What are your takes on the season? Obviously not doing as well as you expected.
Well, up until yesterday, they had won 5 games in a row. But, again, that is a classic aberration. A classic, a shielding of one's eyes. When you look at the New York Yankees, you look at their rotation, and when you see names like Chris Capuano and David Phelps in your starting rotation, you know that you've got serious, serious problems. But the interesting thing about the Yankees is that even with an obliterated pitching staff, it's really been the hitting that has caused them to lose many games. Not even the pitching has been that awful. It's just bats are not coming through. Guys are getting hurt. Guys like Teixeira, Beltran, whenever they seem to get on a roll, this one pulls a back muscle. This one pulls a groin muscle. This one has a wrist injury. Just these things that happen during the season that comes with age. And the fact of the matter is the Yankees are not a young team. They're an older team. They signed veterans in the offseason. They still have some guys under contract. There's a lot of money on the books. And at some point, they just have to look into just getting younger. It's not – there's just so many guys you can sign and expect them to stay healthy and actually perform. But as it's been proven over the past 10 years or so, you really can't buy that championship. The team has to form together and has to perform. And frankly, the hitting has not been up to par. And I do not expect the Yankees to make the playoffs. But if they do, they will be knocked out in the first round, and you can bank on that.
Yeah, it's the problem is you have a lot of other smart teams that are looking at ways that they could build their roster. They're not necessarily throwing money into places. And the Yankees, you know, teams have shown that the better route is to buy yourself prospects, to trade, to do it that way through the farm system. I mean, look at Atlanta. They're not exactly in the thick of things now. They're on the verge of it. And Washington's the prime example in the NL East of, you know, just young talent. Payroll is not crazy high, but they're a scary team playing ridiculously hot. And everyone expects – it's not like this is an aberration from Washington. Everyone expected them to play real well, and they're exceeding expectations. And so the way to build these teams is through the rosters, through the draft, picking up prospects, grooming them, you know. And the Yankees haven't done that, like you said. And the question is, how do you get younger if you're a team like the Yankees? Because their farm system's kind of bare, as we all know, that they keep making these trades for players and you deplete your farm system and you can't just build it up over a short amount of time. I mean, unless you're making trades and getting prospects, which the Yankees haven't done. And so I just don't know where you even start to begin with the Yankees, because the Yankees – we know will never, they can't. They can't afford to have a year where they are in rebuilding mode. You know, New York fans won't tolerate it the way they've built up. You know, this isn't back in the 90s where you could have those few years to build it up, build your young players where, you know, fan expectation wasn't that high, contrary to revisionist history in New York. You know, there was lots of less people coming to the games. They had the option to rebuild, and nowadays with the way that the team works, the media that it draws, its own station, you know, Twitter and Facebook and everything, the fans will never accept an off year by the Yankees or off 2 years to try to rebuild. So they're kind of, I mean, they're in no man's land right now.
It's sad, man. It's really sad because a team like the Yanks who, I mean, they exude a certain confidence, a certain winning tradition, and it's just comprised. I mean, the team is literally compiled. You got pitchers that have been played the last 10 years who haven't really performed. I mean, it's basically duct tape, glue, and a couple of bats. And it's just garbage. I mean, the product they're putting on the field is not something worth paying $40 to sit through, not including the hot dogs and the beer and, the, you know, all the other concessions and the things that you get at the game. It's just not worth it. You'd rather sit at home and watch Michael Kay and whatever other scrub they decide to put in the box with him just to listen to them give their take on the game. Or you can always choose to listen to the great John Sterling and Susan Waldman, who have caused more suicides than cancer. So it's really a crapshoot all around for Yankee baseball. Now talk to me about your Marlins. Enough about this travesty known as the Yanks. How about your young Marlin team? Tell me, what is going to happen with your boy Giancarlo Mike, monster home run hitting stand-in in a year or two? Where is he going?
So it's... I don't know that anyone can make a definitive statement at this point. You know, he's made it pretty clear that unless there's a few years of, I wouldn't even say growth and competitiveness, if there's a few consistent years of them putting money into the roster and really growing it and not doing what they did a few years ago, which, by the way, ended up to be a brilliant move. And if you remember, I said so. You know, even though everyone was trashing them, in hindsight, it was a brilliant move because they got rid of a lot of crappy crappy contracts that, granted, they're the ones who signed it, but they were willing to cut bait. And, you know, now a lot of the young players that are playing at Danny Hecheverria, Gold Glove, in the mix for Gold Glove at shortstop, and Henderson Alvarez, the stud of the rotation right now, were players they picked up in those trades. But, you know, unless they keep doing what they've been doing, you know, they put some money into the roster now, not a ton. There's been talks that it'll go up significantly, you know, relatively speaking, to the Marlins, to the 60, 65 million range in this offseason. I think if they can continue to do that, you know, keep this young talent around. Jose Fernandez should be back around the All-Star break. They made a nice little trade for Jared Cozart, who's pitching really well since they picked him up from Houston. If they can keep that going, you know, right now they are technically on a little bit of a, you know, they're in the playoff hunt, but it's a long shot. They're right within striking distance. And the nice part is the last month, you know, that we're coming into right now is games against the East. So there could be a little bit of a wild card push, but right now they're on the outside looking in. You know, Atlanta is going to be tough to catch, and St. Louis. But if they can stay competitive, if they can put some money into the roster, you know, re-sign some players and keep a solid squad, I think Stanton would really consider or could be convinced to consider signing a long-term extension. Obviously, it, there would be some things put in there that would, you know, allay his fears of the Marlins doing what they've historically done, you know, of building up and then breaking down. But, you know, if they can consistently get better year by year and put money into it, I think there's a shot at re-signing him. They've made it pretty clear that they're going to go year to year by him. He's still under team control for two more seasons. So there's no rush to trade him. They've made it pretty clear that they're not going to trade him. John Heyman, you know, of Fox, keeps throwing out there that he believes that the Marlins should trade him, get four or five, not prospects, you know, but starter is something, you know, along the lines of the Lester trade where you got a Yanis Cespedes back in the deal, you know, get a few starters is what he's saying. But I don't think the Marlins are looking to do that. I think what they're going to do is they're going to go year to year with him. They're going to give him his arbitration money that he deserves, because right now, I mean, anyone else in talks of the MVP is just ridiculous because Stanton is crushing it. I mean, you know, this team wouldn't even be in a discussion of competition if he wasn't putting up the numbers he was. He's batting over 310, 40 home runs, RBIs. I mean, the guy is just creaming everyone else. So they've made it clear they're going to try to build around him over the next year, 2 years, go year to year. So I'd be shocked if I saw him traded. And also remember, you know, the team's kind of in a no-win situation with him because if he doesn't want to extend with them, everyone's automatically going to assume that it's because of management and what they did or didn't do. Although the case might be, you know, it's not A and not B. It might be A and B, the B being, you know, he's made it clear at different times that he likes California. He's a California boy. He probably wants to end up playing in California. So there's a chance that no matter what Miami offers him, he's just going to say, you know what? I'm not really that interested. I want to go play in California. And then I think that will be the point where Miami would just have to cut ties and say, look, in a year or two, you know, we're going to get as much as we can for him. And sadly, management's going to get crushed for it, even though I think with the new general manager they put in, and no one will believe Jeffrey Loria and Dave Sampson that they're going to start putting money in till they actually do it and do it for 3-4 years. You know me, I'm the eternal optimist, but, you know, I get it. I still think Loria and Sampson have been given more flack than deserved, but we'll get into that at a later time. But, you know, so far, I think what they're going to do is try to build around him. You know, the race is coming in. They made the right moves to try to stay in the race. Whether they can, you know, put themselves really into it, they're 2.5 games back, or 3 games back from the wild card right now. That's within striking distance, especially in the NL where the bottom half is kind of in the middle, kind of mediocre. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they finish the season and what they do in the off season. With that, we shall take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back.
See you in a few.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Not satisfied with standard souvenir distribution, you created a device with enough kick to dislocate a mascot's shoulder.
Someone get a stretcher.
Courtside, luxury box, upper deck. Your high-powered cotton cannon makes every section the nosebleed section.
Hit the deck!
So simple, anyone can operate it. After a background check, a training course, and a 5-day waiting period.
It only shoots T-shirts.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, marksman of the mezzanine. Because we know you'll give us the shirt off your back at 180 feet per second.
Mr. T-shirt launching there.
Bud Light beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis. Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Ground beef, refried beans, guacamole, cheese, sour cream, and if there's any room left, a few shreds of lettuce.
I don't see no lettuce.
A culinary creation that baffles the human mind. A 12,000-calorie salad.
Ah, caramba!
Some may ask, is your taco salad healthy? Of course it is. It's a salad, isn't it?
You can eat that deep-fried crunchy bowl.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, conquistador of the calorie. You put the feast in fiesta.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Arms swinging, knees bending, head bobbing, to no particular rhythm. You're either dancing or you have fleas.
Call me a doctor.
As soon as you hit the dance floor, the taunts begin. Is that all you got, playa? Unfortunately, yes, that's all you got.
Pour it on now.
Who's in the house? Some guy who can't dance. That's who's in the house.
You're
so crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Happy Feet, because you really put the oogie in boogie.
Mr. Really, really bad dancer.
Alrighty, we are back. Thank you for joining the Ellie and Izzy in the Afternoon show here on NDB Media via Blog Talk Radio. To join in, give us a call, 347-637-2306, or hit us up on Twitter at Ellie and Izzy Show. And we're back. Let's talk a little bit of the UFC, and it almost seems like to a degree they're going into – it's becoming a circus when it really shouldn't have. With this whole thing with John Bones Jones and Daniel Cormier at their press conference, I mean, to me – it looked a little bit staged. I don't know what your thoughts on that is. Hello?
It's on mute. I do apologize. I'm sorry. I'm still here. I do apologize, unfortunately. My phone was on mute, and I just realized. Okay, basically, as you said, it's become kind of a WWE type of a style when it's so far from that. It's a serious fighting, you know, program. It's a very real, in-your-face, what's it called? What the hell is what I'm looking for? Right. It is a... I'm stumping the hell out of myself here. It's amazing. I'm trying to outthink myself on the damn word. I'm trying to sound so eloquent, and I'm like, what the flying hell is a simple word? The word that I am looking for is
not coming to you, is it?
Exactly. The Ultimate Fighting Championship. There we go. Let me have another drink of scotch or something. Maybe I'll wake the hell up. Yes.
Maybe.
Basically, let's put it simply. The UFC has turned into a circus. It's not supposed to be a circus. It's supposed to be two dudes in an octagon beating the hell out of each other for 3 rounds and 5 minutes, unless it's a championship fight, which is five rounds at 5 minutes apiece. And the guy least bloody and most conscious at the end of that fight should be the guy with his hand raised. Not a couple of clowns standing on a stage, crap-talking each other, and then you have to have some guy stand in the middle only to get thrown. Let me ask you a question, Eli. Think about this. Imagine the guy standing between Johnny Bones Jones and Dan Cormier, and he has to stand between these two dudes who are about to beat the hell out of each other. What is going through his mind? Is he, at that point, is he saying Shema? Like, what's he supposed to do?
I don't know. I mean, the whole thing to me, it didn't even look real. It was too choppy to, like, it just looks staged by, and staged by people who shouldn't be staging though. Like, you know, at least the WWE and these other wrestling things, you know, these guys have some sort of acting behind them. These guys, to me, it can go either way. I couldn't tell you with certainty that was a real beef, it wasn't staged, or, you know, that was staged and you know, it wasn't a real beef. It was too up in the air for me to tell anything. And, you know, the way it ended was just... and then did you see this thing with them on air, with them just going around calling each other? I mean, it was just... it seems like they're trying too hard to draw interest in the UFC when the only thing, like you mentioned, that'll really draw interest is getting good, big profile fighters back in the octagon and having really good fights, you know, and they're it seems like they're going away from that a little. They've gotten a lot of really crappy fights lately just because they need you know, fighters to fill in and last minute, you know. This last Saturday night, they had five or six fighters who never fought in the UFC before, you know, going up against the guys who fought, you know, five, six, seven, 10 times there. And, you know, when you water down your program so much that you're having to rely on this, you know, maybe they need to do something, you know. Football has it perfectly, you know, obviously it's a different thing because you've got 16 games and everyone looks forward to it. The UFC's format before where it was once a month, you know, the big fight, you know, maybe once, you know, every other week with the fight night where, you know, they were really looking forward to it. Big names, you know, coming up. Now it's just watered down and they're doing it every week, every 2 weeks, you know, at most. And it just seems like the quality of fights has gone down and you're not seeing any real great fights anymore. You know, even now with Bone Jones backed out. So we're going to have to wait for the Jones Cormier fight. And you know, you've got a pretty decent fight coming up this week, but you know, did you watch the fights this past Saturday night?
I didn't get a chance to see this past Saturday night. I heard about the Benson Henderson stoppage.
Oh my God. That was ridiculous. I mean, Benson Henderson has gotten, you know, he's so up and down with him and what he's been doing in his past fights. And Rafael Dos Anjos just rocked him in the first round. It felt like it was less than a minute in, you know. And my best, what I love watching is when the ref stops it and the fighter, like, pretends, like, what are you stopping it for when clearly you're rocked. You know, at some point you got to tone down the tough guy thing. You just got rocked. The ref, rightfully so, put a stop to it. Just give it a break.
Yeah,
give it a rest.
You got to realize something also. I think you haven't factored in. Half of the time, the guy's acting like he thinks the fight's still going on. The other 50% of the time, the guy got hit so hard in the head, he still thinks
it's
going on.
He still thinks the fight is going on.
He still thinks he's fighting the ref.
It was a few fights ago. I'm drawing a blank as to who, but one of the woman fights, she got – oh, it was Ronda Rousey who knocked the girl out in like 10 seconds. That girl, when she got up, she was starting to throw at the ref because she thought she was still in the middle of a fight.
She was
it took
not
them 5-6 seconds to stop him.
Of course not, because she got knocked the hell out, man. That's it. They don't know – I've been knocked unconscious before. You know, I was hitting the head with a baseball bat when I was younger. I went to sleep. I just remember my friends telling me my eyes rolled back. I went straight forward and hit the floor. I got back up. I waddled to the side and passed out again. And I remember getting up looking at somebody and not realizing who he was for the first 10 seconds. So I can imagine what it's like to get knocked out, get up, and be like, where the hell am I? What was I doing? Why is this human pushing me down? I should be punching him in the face. So I totally get I totally understand why these people don't know what's flying. And let me tell you something, what you mentioned about the fights getting worse, and I completely agree with you, and I'll tell you, I'm an old-school UFC pride fighting guy. I started watching mixed martial arts on TV back when it was the pride fighting championships in Japan. And by the way, in Japan, the rules are so much different than the UFC. Do you know that in Japan's rules, in the pride fighting a promotion, you are allowed to stomp on a guy's head on the floor? There are things that are illegal in that situation, in that promotion, that the UFC would never dream of legally allowing. The United States would not allow it. They would ban the fighting altogether. But the quality of fighter that it provided was, I can give you names like guys like Fedor Emelianenko, another gentleman who you are very familiar with, Kevin Randleman. He was a huge pride fighting guy. Rampage Jackson got his start. Mauricio Shogun Ahua. These are names of guys that back in the day were the face of pride. And then, of course, in the beginning with the UFC, you had Matt Hughes, you had Randy Couture, Chuck Liddell. Even Vanderlei Silva. Like, these guys, they've gotten old. And some of them are just no longer – they can't fight anymore. I mean, they've beaten themselves to bits. So now the UFC has to fill in these fights. It's basically 95% filler. They need to get two guys in the ring who beat each other up, and that's it. And even when they're beating each other up, you're not that impressed because the skills aren't there. The best fighters, they say, pound for pound now are Chris Weidman, you have Johnny Bones Jones, and you have GSP. But, like, who has challenged GSP in the past? Who has been a decent fighter? He's been knocked out one time in the ring. And you know when he got knocked out? He got knocked out by a gentleman named Matt Serra in a freak fight where GSP slipped. And I feel like he slipped into Serra's punch. So he went to sleep, and they ended up having a rematch, and obviously GSP destroyed him. But the point is, when you have guys that are just so much better than everybody else, what can you really put in the ring against them? I mean, Weidman beat up Anderson Silva a few times, and it's like, who's going to fight him? Johnny Bones Jones. He hasn't lost in the UFC. The only technical loss that he has was a no contest because he elbowed a guy on the ground. I remember it was a fighter. He's deaf. I forgot his name. I think his name is Hamill. But he hit. I watched the fight. I remember watching it on TV live. He hit him in the head on the mat, and it was like an illegal elbow, so they called the fight, and he ended up losing the fight because of it. But back to the point, the quality of fighter is not what it used to be. And you're not going to get good fights when you have these guys whose techniques are just stand and just try to throw bombs, and there's no real skill behind it. It just doesn't make for good television. It doesn't make for a good fight. And frankly, I think Dana White and Lorenzo, I forgot his last name, from Zuffa. Right, thank you. They're basically just running around. They don't know what they're doing. They're trying to pluck fighters off of these garbage promotions and seeing what they can put together. But it's sad because what they were a couple of years ago, the UFC was the biggest thing on a Saturday night 4 or 5 years ago. It's huge. Everybody was at the bar checking it out. Myself included.
Yeah, it is a shame. You know, it was funny, a few months back, Dan Le Batard in Miami had Dana White on, and he told Dana, look, you guys lack star power anymore, and who did Dana White throw a fit? But he's right. I mean, except for hardcore UFC fans, no one knows. I mean, even among sports fans, no one really knows who John Bone Jones is, Ronda. And, you know, these are names that no one really knows. They do have a star power. You know, they need to start getting better fighters and not just dropping in and letting, you know, the people who come in, I mean, and have no experience in the UFC, at least in the past few fights, have all gotten rocked. And it's just dropping down the quality of your product, and at some point they got to realize that, you know, you did have the fastest growing sport in the world, and I don't believe that's so anymore. It's kind of, you know, ponied up, and it looks like it's at best treading water. They need to figure out how to get it back to where it's the fastest growing sport and not this watered down version of the UFC that we are seeing, you know, lately. And it'll be interesting to see how they do it. You know, really what they need to do is get back to, I mean, even I've been watching on Fox lately, you know, they moved over to Fox trying to draw a wider range, but they keep doing this, you know, going back to the studio, and they had Matt Serra in there, and they had Jake Ellsberg, they had Rashad, you know, Sugar Jones in there, you know, Sugar Evans in there. And, you know, it's interesting to hear their perspectives. But the UFC, you don't need studio. You know, you don't need – this isn't the NFL. This isn't the NBA. You don't need to kick back to the studio to get, you know, tips and stuff. For the wider audience, the way to learn – I mean, you remember. I mean, I first started picking this up about a year ago, and the way to really learn is just to sit there and watch fights. You don't learn it by sitting there and listening to these guys explaining what's going on. And, you know, they're watering it down, even not even with the fights, but watering it down based on going, you know, the way Fox is promoting it. And they need to figure out a way to go back to the way they had it. And I really do hope they can get it back. And it'll be interesting to see where the UFC goes with that. This Saturday night will be interesting with the Gustafsson rematch, and we shall see. Hopefully the whole card this Saturday night does better than the one last Saturday night, because I'll tell you, the one last Saturday night was kind of a doozy, even if the Henderson Dos Anjos fight would have turned out better. And we'll take a quick break and be right back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor,
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Ground beef, refried beans, guacamole, cheese, sour cream, and if there's any room left, a few shreds of lettuce.
I don't see no lettuce.
A culinary creation that baffles the human mind. A 12,000-calorie salad.
Ah, caramba!
Some may ask, is your taco salad healthy? Of course it is. It's a salad, isn't it?
You can eat that deep-fried crunchy bowl.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, conquistador of the calorie. You put the feast in fiesta.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Arms swinging, knees bending, head bobbing to no particular rhythm. You're either dancing or you have fleas.
Call me a doctor.
As soon as you hit the dance floor, the taunts begin. Is that all you got, playa? Unfortunately, yes, that's all you got.
Pour it on now.
Who's in the house? Some guy who can't dance. That's who's in the house.
You're
so crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Happy Feet, because you really put the oogie in boogie.
Mr. Really, really, really bad dancer.
We're back. It's Ellie and Izzy in the afternoon. Once again, to reach us, it's 347-637-2306, or get a hold of us via Twitter at Ellie and Izzy Show. We're back, Izzy. We haven't spoken since something that's still, I'm still in shock over this, and I didn't expect it. First of all, the news was shocking, and just the way Robin Williams, I mean, I still can't, you know, Billy Crystal, you know, I hope you saw the thing they did at the Emmys for him. I don't know what you would call it. They called it the memorial, but the retrospective they did, and it was just perfect. But as Billy Crystal said, it's hard to fathom talking about Robin Williams in the past as if he's no longer here, because for me, his comedy, his acting, it helps shape a lot of how you look at things and approach and realize that there's a lot that we can sit around and laugh about, and not in a destructive way, but in a very positive way. And what are your memories of Robin Williams?
It's great that you asked that question, because to paraphrase, to go where you were going with that, he did shape a lot of our lives. I mean, growing up as kids, there was Jumanji, there was Jack, Mrs. Doubtfire. I mean, these were movies that we grew up watching. I mean, we came home from school or it was a Sunday afternoon and you turned on the TV and that what was playing. And it's not just that he was a funny guy, but he did it better than anybody else. And I want to tell you a quick story that actually happened while I was working at B&H Photo, where we met. I had met different actors over the year and a half that I worked there. And none of the actors that I'd met really blew me away from like a star-studded standpoint, where it's like, oh my gosh, I just sold the camera to Steve Nash, or I sold the camera to Mikhail Baryshnikov, like I cared. But when I saw Robin Williams, he walked in front of me, I was just like, I was tongue-tied. I couldn't talk. I couldn't say, you know, thank you for making, you know, for giving me something during my childhood, for giving me an outlet with what you brought to the table, your energy, your funniness, the things that you did that nobody else can possibly do. And the story is basically, he was leaving B&H. He was walking towards the cashier on the first floor, as you recall, the B&H setup. And somebody yelled out, oh, my God, it's Robin Williams. And suddenly there was a mad frenzy. People turned around. They ran towards the film section just to see this guy. Now, regular stars are generally people, there's a huge crowd. What do? You ignore it, you turn around, maybe you wave, and then you walk out, right? That wasn't what Robin Williams did. He turned around. He started flexing his muscles like a monkey, and he started jumping up and down. This was, I forgot what time of the day this was. He's jumping around. He's jumping around like he's literally back in the 80s, like he's drugged up and he's insane. He's jumping around, and people are freaking out. They're like, oh, my God, it's Robin Williams. And he did this for about, I'd say, 10 to 15 seconds. Also, people could get a laugh and a rise. This is the guy that I saw in person. People speak about stories that they've heard. I witnessed this. I experienced it.
Well, that also, it's not just making everyone else laugh. It perfectly explains the situation of what was going on. He you know, there obviously, it seems like there's an element of an animal in the cage, you know, with everyone just looking at him like that. And so, you know, he didn't just make you laugh. He made you laugh in a way that looked at the reality of things. And, you know, people pointed out afterwards that he always had that sad look on him. And yet he was still able to keep it going and to channel it in a way that made us all laugh and look at reality differently. And, you know, some of the parts obviously weren't his writing, you know, but the way he played it and the way he did it. But, you know, I'm a huge fan of stand-up comedy in general, and Robin Williams stuff. I mean, it wasn't to say that he was the greatest improv artist we've ever seen is an understatement. I mean, to compare it to baseball, the major leagues and minor leagues, he is the major leagues. Everyone else is trying their best to compete at AAA. I mean, he was just brilliant with his improv. He let it all flow, let it come out. There was never, you know, and he knew how to be serious at times also. But the improvisation that he did, I mean, even his stand-up stuff, if I recall correctly, he said all he did was go up on stage with a vague outline of where he wanted to go, and he just let it go. So, I mean, the talent to do that, and not just talent, but the incredible genius that came out of it, you know, out of his mouth. I mean, one of my favorite jokes, you know, of all time is Robin Williams, you know, says he was on a German radio talk show.
Yes.
And the woman asks him, you know, Robin, why? And he does it in the German accent. I'm not even going to try to do it. But Robin, why do you think
accent, right?
Why do you think there's no funny people in Germany? And, you know, without missing a beat, he ever said, you know, he says, do you ever think you killed them all? You know, and they're asking a question that was just, I mean, asking for an answer like that, and he summed it up perfectly, you know, he was able to do that with so many different things. And, you know, here I'm just looking at his quotes, you know, one of the good ones is, you're only given one little spark of madness and you mustn't lose it. And that was his mission, was to show everyone that, yeah, there is a spark of madness in everyone, and obviously there was a spark of madness within him, and he didn't lose it. He went out there, and it was just, I mean, Billy Crystal summed it up perfectly, you know, in the way he finished off what he was saying, you know, and said, Robin Williams, what a concept, and there is, you will never see, unfortunately, anyone like Robin Williams, and I mean, just, you never expected something like this with him. I mean, at this point, did it shock you? I don't say it was shocked, you know, but
no.
it was still stunning that he did it, because it was just at random, out of the blue, and, you know, there were roles that he was coming up in, and you thought, you know, you always knew, and he was very open about this, being in and out of rehab and the demons that he was fighting, but it was just, wow, it was a gut punch, and it was, I have yet to hear a bad experience with him. People just love being around him. He was, you know, the one video that came out, the last video that people have of him was him calling some random person in New Zealand, I believe. I could be wrong on that, but middle of nowhere, because her boyfriend told her that one of her wishes on her bucket list, because she was dying of some terminal illness, that was to meet Robin Williams, but unfortunately she couldn't travel. And he just Skyped with her and, you know, sent her a video. I mean, it was just out of the blue, and supposedly spent a good chunk of the year with the troops and, you know, entertaining them. And it was just, and also the stupidity that came out from people's mouths afterwards, talking about how he should have had the strength to do it. Shut up. You know, people don't realize that, you know, mental illness is something real. It's not, it's just like any other disease. It's like anything else. And you know what? The Academy Awards, I think it was the Academy Awards that came out, or the Writers Guild, the Actors Guild that came out with that picture with the genie, and, you know, saying, Robin, you're free. You know what? To me, and they did it right away. It was a very poignant message, I think it summed it up very free. And of course, afterwards, all these, you know, and I'm not minimizing at all. Suicide is a very, very real risk, and people obviously will take the fact that some people, you know, choose that their pain is too much for them to deal with and take their lives, and it'll make it, I don't think easier is the right word. I disagree with people saying that it makes it easier for them. But you know what? That wasn't, their cartoon there was not any sort of message. It was just summing it up perfectly that obviously for Robin Williams, we'll never know what but for him, this set him free. And, you know, it wasn't any sort of national message and sending messages to people with mental illness that it's okay. It was just a nice message, and people need to stop pontificating on this stuff. And the irony of me saying that is because we're pontificating on the opposite side. Don't pontificate about this while I pontificate about what we're about to.
Bastard. You catch 22 SOB, dude.
Oh yeah,
I don't pay heed. I paid none of these people heed. Their opinions mean absolutely nothing to me. Yes, mental illness is real, and what he went through, we will never understand. Because as funny a man as he was, and as amazing as he was with his fans and with all those around, we cannot imagine the type of inner demons that he went through. We don't know. We don't have a clue. So when I saw people writing things in a sense where Robin Williams was selfish, how dare he take his life, I quickly scrolled down. I didn't read into it because, frankly, the schmucks that wrote these things, they have no bearing on me. They don't. There's nothing of importance that could possibly be leaving their mouth at that point. Because once you make a statement of that idiotic caliber, you are lost in, like, you're lost in the world of intelligence. You're gone. You're finished. Whatever you have to say beyond that is pure stupidity. Robin Williams was the greatest, as you said, when you say major leagues. He was the greatest improv man of all time. He's kind of like the opposite of Dane Cook. Except when this happened, I was like,
Robin Williams has talent. Dane Cook does not.
Dane Cook is AIDS. Dane Cook, if he died, people would have been happy. People would have been dancing. It would have, the genie in the bottle would have said, thank you for killing this awful bastard. Now, obviously, I'm not wishing death upon him. But if you had Robin Williams and Dane Cook sitting at a cliff and I could push one of them over, I'm going to push Dane twice.
Let's say had to.
You're right. Had to. I'm backing up a truck into him, my friend. Dane Cook, yes. So it's always the good ones that are gone. And I truly believe the three greatest comedians of our time, not even of our time, but in the past 50 years, are no longer around. And that would be the great George Carlin, the great Richard Pryor, and the great Robin Williams. The three kings of comedy, essentially. They are the OGs. These guys are no longer around, and now we're stuck with hacks like Dane Cook and Jeff Ross and the rest of these wannabe laughs, the jokesters who jack people's material and need 57
minutes. There's still a few good ones. I mean, Louis C.K. is pretty damn good and brilliant and original material. There's still some good ones left out there.
Give me five. Give me five legit comedians right now. Louis C.K. don't count. He's OG, man. He's legit. Give me five.
He's OG in style. He's not OG in practicality because he's only been on the scene. You know, he's been around forever, but he's been, you know, up and coming for, you know, only a few years. He's only been, you know, the rock star that he is for a few years. Who would I say is you've got Louis C.K. The problem is that list of Pryor, Carlin, and Williams is just so solid. You're probably right. You can't. That's just too solid a list for you even to try to say something. And the fact that you'll never have that.
No, of course not. I'm not saying compare it, because my point was there'll never be anything close. But what that's what I'm saying.
You struggle. But, I mean, even me. I think I know a fair number of the big comedians out there, and it's hard. You just heard me. It's hard to pull five off the top of your head right now that are even, you know, you're saying that you're gonna go for an hour of their show and just have your mind blown away. And to me, it's not even mind blown away. There has to be something deeper than that. Your perspective on life has to change, and you have to have thought deeply during that show. Chris Rock was up there at one point. He hasn't had anything like that in a few years. But in Chris Rock's heyday, his shows did that. They made you get up there, and you just looked at the way that the population as a whole looks at things, and it made you say, what the hell was I thinking? I really need a paradigm shift and a perspective change. But, you know, and Robin Williams did that with every appearance. He made you look at the crazy way we look at things and the hypocrisy that we all show in our day-to-day lives. And Carlin did it just as well also. You know, I mean, you're right. There are not five names right now that pop up at you and you say, yeah, these guys are just going to have that type of
effect on you. It just doesn't exist. I'll give you another guy. Unfortunately, he wasn't around long enough for guys our age to really be able to appreciate him. But I was lucky enough to have heard some of his stuff on YouTube, and I watched a special on his life and on his comedy and the comedian swore by him. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the name Sam Kinison. Have you heard of his name?
Oh, sure. Sam Kinison was great.
He was back in the late 80s, early 90s. This guy was probably the funniest bastard out there. And guys like Carlin and Pryor, obviously not Robert, but Williams, everybody knew who Sam Kinison was. The minister turned comedian who was so non-conventional, but so damn funny. Everything he did was amazing.
Yeah, and he's another guy who just, you know, had a ton of demons in there and brought it out in the best way on the stage and, you know, just did his thing, you know. It was, Dave Chappelle used to be able to do that, but, you know, he obviously dropped off. His latest routine, I went to him when he was in Atlanta about 6 to 8 months ago. It was pretty good, but it was not, there were, you know, hits and misses, you know, still. He used to, his other, you know, way back when, 5, 10 years ago, before he left the show, when he was just coming out with the stand-up, he had that type of, you know, gut-punching stand-up material that was just brilliant, but, you know, he lost it a little, and if he can come back to that level, he would be up there with Louis C.K., but other than that, it's saddening. It's our loss that we don't have this type of entertainers anymore.
The brand, but the entertainment
that, you know, it's what, like we said, you know, it's watered down. It doesn't make you think. It's entertainment just for entertainment's sake at this point. And to me, that type of entertainment doesn't have much value. Entertainment for entertainment's sake is nice sometimes, but you've got to have the real entertainment that makes you think, makes you think without thinking you're thinking, and that's what we're missing out on.
Unfortunately, you're right, and that's why I asked you. That's why I specifically said, I want you to give me the five guys off the top of your head, not including Louis C.K., and you couldn't come up with it, not because they're not in your head, but because the question is deep, in which I want great comedians, and you realize, wait a minute, who am I going to choose here? Jeffrey Ross, Lisa Lampanelli, like people that are hired to do stupid Comedy Central roasts, like just crap, you know, to stand there for 5 minutes and repeat jokes that were written by a room filled with like 30 people, 27 of which were Jews, you know, drinking a crap ton of coffee and Red Bull to come up with, you know, come up with these idiotic jokes. And frankly, it is sad. I still do love comedy, but Williams was an idol of mine. Obviously, Carlin and Pryor, I mean, I listened to their stuff. Obviously, I didn't see them live, but even a guy like Kinison, like, I watched their stuff, and that's really what, like, brought out, it teaches you, like you said, to think. It's more than just funny. You're actually, it makes sense. You're like, wait a minute. It's funny as hell, but it makes perfect sense. It's clarity. But why am I laughing at how stupid it is? Because it's so true. We don't have that guy today, other than Louis C.K. I don't want to hear the name as is Ansari, Russell Peters, Pablo Francisco. Again, there are cue laughs. I'll give you an example of a funny guy. He's funny.
Pablo Francisco's first stand-up special was pretty good. But once again, it didn't make you think. It was just entertaining. After that, it's been awful. It's just, I mean, I went to him a year and a half ago here in Atlanta, and it was just awful. I was ready. I was so upset because it was just bad porno jokes and him trying to do the voice with that, and it was just, oh, I was crying, and it was so bad. And
Maria,
you know, the thing is now you have some good comedians, but you don't have any great ones anymore. And they don't, like we said, they don't make you think. And it's just, it's sad that, you know, people are going to need to go back and just, you know, not have live comedy anymore. And you're just going to have to live off of the Robin Williams and the Carlins, the Pryors, the Kinisons. Bill Hicks was another great comedian. I mean, there were some, the 80s and early 90s was the heyday for comedy. And like you said, Russell Peters is funny, but it's not, there's no depth to it. It's funny. Yeah. He touches on some stereotypes, but, you know, there's no, you know, depth to it.
You want another guy? I'll give you a guy who's very funny, but again, there's no thinking really. A funny guy. He is unbelievably funny. I'll give him that. Gabriel Iglesias, the Fluff Man, very funny.
Oh, Iglesias! See, this is the good. The funny part is we're driving. We're both talking to say that he's hilarious, and Atlanta here has this little comedy club called the Punchline. It was rated one of the top 10 comedy clubs in the country. It was a nice little surprise for me when I moved here, and up until 6 months ago, the best part was they had a fee for, you know, for entering the door. They had a door charge, and that was it. There was no drink minimum. There was no other crap. So, you know, the comedy clubs in New York are great, but that's where they get you is, you know, they charge you a $20 gate fee, and then they nail you with the two drinks. But the thing is, so I show up there, you know, I went to see my first show there was Dimitri Martin. Dimitri Martin he has some of his stuff makes you think, and he was great in the way one of my favorite comedians. What's his name? Longish hair, overdosed. Oh, I cannot believe I'm forgetting
Red
his name
Giraldo.
Right now.
Red Giraldo.
No.
Mike DeStefano.
No. He was just one line after one line.
Mitch Hedberg.
Dimitri Martin is today's Mitch Hedberg. Not nearly as great, but pretty darn close. And he has some that make you think, but it's not fully. It's more humorous. It's a little bit of depth with humor. But I mean, Mitch Hedberg also was holy crap, so funny. And you have to Mitch Hedberg is the type of guy, you have to be smart to understand Mitch Hedberg. If you have average or even mediocre intelligence, you will not get Mitch Hedberg, and you will look at people and say, why the heck does everyone think he's so funny? And you are just missing out on some of the funniest stuff you will ever hear. But so I saw Dimitri Martin at this comedy club, and then I saw George Lopez, who once again, there's no greatness to him. He's funny, and he touches on the stereotypes in a humorous way. And then I went to go see Gabriel Iglesias. Now, the most I ever paid for a show at this place was $30 to this point. Gabriel Iglesias, they charge $40. I say, okay, you know what? Gabriel is funny. Fluffy is really funny. I'd love to go see him live. And you have to picture it. It's this small little comedy club. It fits maybe 100 people. It's very, wow, not cramped. It's warm. It's, you know, you get that old school comedy club feeling, and the stage is right in front of you. You know, there's no bad seat. You're pretty much on top of them. And so I figure, you know what, to go see Gabriel Iglesias at this club, it's worth $40. I know I'm not getting hit with anything else. I show up, I sit down. Sir, you know we have a new policy, a 2-drink minimum. So me, I flew the freaking handle. I got on Twitter right away, and I started ripping them on Twitter because that's what I do. And I said, this is, you know, even to the waitress, I said, this is unacceptable. I mean, you know what? The clubs in New York, they all do it. Most comedy clubs nowadays do it. And unfortunately, I think that's the way this club is going to shift to. But if you're going to do it, that should be part of your policy. You know, tell people in advance, there is no way in hell I'm going to let fly that I sit down and then you put this on top of me that you have this policy. That is what we call a pile of crock.
That is a New York standard, my friend, as you so clearly stated. But I do want to tell you something. You made a statement that I have to correct. You said that there are a couple of good comedy clubs in New York, and I have to tell you, there is only one good comedy club in New York, unfortunately, and that is the Comedy Cellar. All the other clubs generally do not have good guys headlining. They typically have a lot of filler, usually guys that are inexperienced. Comedy Cellar has guys. Everybody that is on, that is working or out of the Comedy Cellar has TV experience, has special experience. And the great thing about the Cellar is that they randomly have guys walk in and do set. I heard supposedly a few months ago, Seinfeld walked in and did a few sets. Just randomness. Like, you never know what's going to happen. But that's the respected comedy club. Unfortunately, there was a car accident about five months ago with Tracy Morgan. Not that I give a shit about Tracy. I'm sorry. Not that I give a damn about Tracy Morgan. Obviously, I don't want him to get hurt or anything. But there was another guy who was injured very seriously in that crash named Artie Fuqua, who is an MC at the Comedy Cellar, and he is better than half the comedians that are up there. He's absolutely phenomenal. Unfortunately, like I said, he got hurt, and I don't know if he's back at work yet, but he is by far the best MC that I've seen here on the East Coast. And as far as comedy clubs go, next time you're in New York, we definitely have to hit up the Comedy Cellar. I'm actually going next week with a couple of friends. We haven't gone along.
I went last time. I was in New York about a month and a half ago. There was no headline. It was just who was it? Let's see. There was
Kelly. Let me guess. Probably Bob Kelly.
No, Bob Kelly was the MC. Yes.
Okay, Bob. Kurt Metzger.
Kurt Metzger was not that show that I went to. It was the, what's his name? The other guy from the Chappelle Show.
Donnell Rawlings?
No, yeah, Donnell Rawlings was there. It was also...
What about Charlie Murphy?
Charlie Murphy was not there for my show. There are guys who I went for, and I was looking, you know, last time I went to New York was the first time I made it to the Cellar, and it was a pretty good show. It wasn't great, but there have been times, shows where I was just, I wish I was able to make it to, because they are solid all the way through pretty much every night of the week. it was, I mean, they are, like you said, if you're in New York and are a comedy fan, the Comedy Cellar is a place you've got to go, because it's got that old school comedy feel, you know, club feel. It's on top of each other, nice romantic feeling, but you know, you're close, it's small, the stage is right there, you don't have to worry about things, you know, it's a nice environment, but like
and you're
you
right
said,
the heart of the village. You're right in the heart of the village, and when you leave, there's so many other things to do. You can go to Cafe Wa, you can go up the block, there's so many other options, there's so many other venues, there's so many nice places. I personally love the village, or that area. It's a hopping scene, you got a NYU student. It's a good time.
If you, the other thing you got to check out is really, and I was turned on to this by somebody, Monday night at the Upright Citizens Brigade, they have this thing called Whiplash. The list, there's no official list of who's going to be performing. It's a free show in the Upright Citizens Brigade. It starts at either 11 or 12, and it goes for a solid hour and a half. But there are people who drop in. I mean, all the big names drop in there, and it was, I went, it was an okay, you know, list of comedians. If I was in New York, man, I would definitely be there. If not every week, every other week, because it was just, A, it's free, so anything free, free's for me, baby. But other than that, it was just the you're right. It's even smaller than the Comedy Cellar. It's like three rows of theater seats. And the comedians, you see them. They're all sitting there. It's almost like in the Cellar. I don't know if you realize in the Cellar, but at the Cellar, they all the comedians just sit there. They sit right by the door, the back door, and they
right.
wait. So it was, this was even better because they weren't even all at the back door. It was they were all just congregated together at Whiplash. Whiplash is something you really got to check out. Monday nights at the Upright Citizens Brigade. You can make reservations, but you know, or you just show up. But it's definitely something to check out. And they've had Chris Rock stop by there, Louis C.K. I mean, all the big names, just like at the Cellar, they stop in and drop in. My brother was once at the Cellar, and Chris Rock stopped in. So, yeah, like you said, the Cellar can't be beat. And, geez, man, it's...
That's pretty legit. I'll tell you, tonight, in fact, there's a comedian. I'm not big on him, but people love him. It's this guy, Mike Birbiglia. He's going to be on...
Mike Birbiglia's pretty good.
Yeah, he's not bad. Yeah, I don't know. I'm more of a Gaffigan guy. I think some of Gaffigan's stuff is funny. I mean, again, it goes back to the funny factor. It's like funny but doesn't blow you away. On that note, since you're talking about things to do in the city, there's another place. I mean, I'm not sure if you're a karaoke dude, if you like that type of thing, but there's a place called Arlene's Grocery at 95 Stanton. It's ridiculous. Basically, Monday nights, they have a band, a live band that just plays metal. You get up there, you sing your brains out, and you have a live metal band playing behind you. It's awesome for that person who wants to feel like a rock star for 5 minutes and impress his girlfriend. But that's one of the many options. Now, if it's someone that wants to impress their boyfriend, that's fine, too, or whatever else their preference is. Back to the a discussion we'll probably be having at some point soon. Regarding another issue, so I'm not going to even touch up on that. So I guess we've jumped on the comedy bandwagon. We went that way, which I'm very happy we're able to discuss because I see we're in agreement on that particular issue. Because I got to be honest, if you told me that Russell Peters is one of your favorite comedians, I'd probably hang up the phone, delete you off Facebook, and probably send you a pile of feces in the mail. That's what probably happens.
I like Russell Peters to me is funny, but there's no, he's not a must see. He's not a, I almost
deleted
put the theme at the wall. There's some of the stuff that's legitimately funny. It's.
You put 50 cents and 50 cents together, you have a dollar. Oy vey. Yeah, some of his stuff is funny. But he ain't Carlin.
Now,
he ain't Kinnison. He ain't Williams. And he sure as
no,
hell ain't
No, of
problem.
Course not. No, no, he's not in the, he's not even close to those. But he's funny. I mean, the thing is, I don't know. Did you watch Last Comic Standing this year?
I actually did not. I watched it a few years back when Giraldo was a it was Greg Giraldo, Andy, I forgot his last name, and what's her name? The little comedian. She's annoying, obnoxious. What the hell is her name? Italian name. What the hell is her name? I completely forgot it. Whatever. She's a no-name. Whatever the point is, that's the last time I watched Last Comic Standing a few years back. Why? Peters was on this year.
They had this guy on who was, to me, not even, I mean, barely even funny, but that show is so clearly scripted for in advance that they're the winner. They know in advance who the winner is going to be. Whatever. Let's not, if you didn't watch it, it doesn't even pay to go down that road. Because the guy.
Giraldo, yeah, it was the last. I was actually, by the way, you want to crack up. The year that Giraldo was actually was doing it, I was supposed to go. I was actually going to try out for that show as a deer. I never ended up going through with it because some things happened. But I was supposed to do it in 2011.
Now that's Greg Giraldo was, you know, if he was still alive, would also would be a name that's pretty damn close to that list. I mean, Giraldo was.
He had wit. He had the wit of a lawyer. He was a lawyer. He went to Harvard. He was a brilliant guy. Greg Giraldo was a brilliant, brilliant guy, and unfortunately never had a lot of success, and people knew of his greatness through only his comedy, Stupid Central roast. That's what people associate Greg Giraldo with, and it's a freaking travesty because he was so much more than that. He really was.
Yeah. Now, there's this one guy I saw when I was at this Whiplash who was just – apparently people think he's funny, but to me it was just – now, I don't like comedians who are – I don't mind dirty, but if you're dirty just for the sake of being dirty, that's just – it makes no sense to me because it's not funny to me. Like you said, it doesn't serve any purpose. But this guy, Jay Oakerson?
Big Jay Oakerson. Yes, I know who Jay Oakerson is. Big fat dude with a ponytail out back. Wears a lot of jewelry, a lot of facial hair. Yes, Big Jay Oakerson. What's up?
No, I just got stuck listening to him in the middle of a show, and I was ready. Oh, my God, that was awful. For me, it was awful.
He talks a lot about his penis being small. That's the thing. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. I forgot we're on the air. We are on the air.
He's a fat wannabe Andrew Dice Clay.
Exactly. I just asked you, are you a dice man? Because I got to tell you, I used to be a huge dice guy. Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, Jack burnt off his bleep, bleep, bleep. I used to be, when I was a teenager, again, it was funny when I was a teenager. It just gets to a certain point where you're like, I want to think with my comedy. I don't just want to laugh because he made a phallus joke. Like, it's funny, but how often can you talk about a phallus? At some point, it's just not funny no more. I want to, I want to laugh, actually. Like, even fart humor is better than that.
Yeah, it's
really.
He panders to the lowest common denominator, and the lowest common denominator usually is in the crowd, the people who are going to laugh over and over at that stuff.
Yeah, well, one of his good friends is actually a guy I'm friendly with on Facebook. He's a pretty funny guy, pretty funny comedian. His name is Kurt Metzger. He's pretty cool with him. He claims he's a very funny guy, but like you said, he mostly just has, like phallus jokes, and it's all about knob. There's nothing really to it. It's just – there's no wit to it. It's just that. And when there's just that, it's just not funny anymore. It's kind of like Lisa Lampanelli, where her comedy is just offend the Chinese man, offend the gay man, and everyone laughs for 4 seconds, and then eventually it's just not funny anymore because it's the same material repeated over and over and over again. Where's the wit? Where's the thought? Where's the writing? Where's the real jokes? Unfortunately,
you know, now that I'm thinking about it, you know who's pretty close to maybe cracking that list? Ron
White.
Give
me a hit. Wait. Ah, Ron White, that drunken man. So you're not even, you're going to go Ron White. You're not even going to go Jeff Foxworthy or Bill Engvall. It's that bad.
Well, they're good. I like them too, but I think Ron White has a little more depth to him. His comedy has more depth to me. You know, there is Bill Engvall and Foxworthy are more so just pointing out everyday life than really, and they're hilarious at doing it, and they're right up there, but it's more so pointing out everyday life than it is getting to the meat of things and making you think.
Well, Ron White, to his credit, usually does the show drunk. He's usually stoned when he's doing a show. I've never seen him live, but I've seen him on TV. I've seen, you know, the Blue Comedy Tour. I got to be honest, Larry the Cable Guy, he really doesn't make me laugh.
No, not in the slightest.
You like Larry the Cable Guy?
No, not in the slightest. And it's all an act. I mean, that's the worst part of it.
What was his real name?
I don't know, but have you ever seen the video of him doing it not as Larry the Cable Guy?
No.
There's a video of him doing stand-up comedy not as Larry the Cable Guy. It's not
I know
bad,
his real name.
But it's...
I just remembered his real name. His real name is Dan Whitney.
Right, exactly. You've got to Google it and watch the video of Dan Whitney doing stand-up comedy. It'll mess with your mind. I don't know what else to say. It wasn't bad, but it almost makes you question why did he have to go to this Larry the Cable Guy shtick, but, you know, some people just choose to go that route, and good luck to them. But, you know, he definitely made out fairly well from going that route. So,
well, I'll tell you this, very interestingly, about these giant comedians, guys like Dan Whitney and that Blue Comedy Tour, they made a ton of money. They made a crap ton of money. I mean, I'm not sure if you know how much, supposedly, Engvall's always complaining about how, like, rich Dan Whitney got off of it. It's like, I think the greatest joke was people would rather pay $50 to see your show than to pay for toilet paper for their outhouse. It was something retarded like that, just hilarious. But the truth is, I mean, I would love to find out if, like, this show that we're doing now is being recorded, obviously, and like some of these big name comedians listen to it and go, who the hell are these two douchebags talking about comedy like they know what the hell it's about? And then we get called out on Twitter or online. So please, comedians,
yeah,
if you have nothing better to do today, please, comedians out there, if you have nothing better to do than to listen to our awesome radio show, I want you to please call us out. Eli, please give us that Twitter name.
It's Eli and Izzy Show. But you can't, you gotta, if you really want to cause some ruckus, you gotta go on Twitter and start pretend, you know, just say, have you heard what these guys said? You know, oh, there's no way in the world. Heck, I would bet no one's even listening to us now anyway, so.
Well, I'll tell you this, my friend, I have a friend, Moshe Braun. He's actually a pretty funny bastard himself, pretty funny guy. He's done some work also. He just threw a couple of names my way. He told me that a couple of unknowns are phenomenally funny. This guy, Gary Goldman, and Mike Vecchione. I've seen Vecchione. He's pretty funny. I have
Gary
seen
Goldman's pretty funny, too. I'll give you Gary Goldman.
Well, so you've seen him. I unfortunately haven't. But Vecchione, I've seen his stuff. There was another guy named Mike DiStefano. A couple of years ago, unfortunately, passed away. But he was a pretty funny guy, too. I mean, again, you see, we keep on saying they're pretty funny guys, but
yeah,
they aren't Robin. They aren't Carlin, and they are certainly not Pryor or Kinnison. And by the way, Kinnison, I miss that dude more than, obviously not as much as Williams, but Kinnison is right up there. I wish that guy stayed alive longer. I really do, because he would have been one of the greatest. Even though he was one of the greats, he could have been even better.
Yeah. Ooh, this is interesting news. Just saw on Twitter now, Hamas's leader just rushed to the hospital in Gaza from after not feeling well. I guess 50 days in a bunker will do that to you. Big talker.
Wait a minute. Hold on. He was rushed to the hospital. Let me guess. The hospital was in Israel that he was rushed to, right? And Israel is going to treat him.
Yeah, I wouldn't take any other bet.
Of course, of course. They're treating him. They're treating his family. They're treating his yeast infection, whatever other problems he has. It's amazing. But, you know, it's Israel. It's Israel this. It's Israel that. Can you believe the crap that's going on out there? The amount of garbage that these supposed stars are spewing, schmucks like Russell Brand. It's funny, we're talking about comedians, and Russell Brand is about three notches below MC Hammer on the scale of importance at this point in life. And he's talking junk about Israel being an apartheid state, and just amazing, just the pure genius coming out of some of these people's mouths and from their pens to paper. It makes me wonder how they've been able to live without being murdered while walking into traffic. It baffles me that this Penelope Cruz and Javier Bardem signing a document, free Palestine, or Rihanna, or Dwight Howard, or any of these other schmucks that are in society that think that they're important and have an opinion, calling out Israel. Have they not looked at history? Have they not looked at what's going on? Or do they just tune into Al Jazeera Network and watch doctored photos of Israeli children being murdered? Do you remember that? Remember the family that was murdered a couple of years ago? Do you know that there were people that doctored photos and claimed that it was Palestinian children who were murdered? That's how sick and twisted the propaganda is. I'd love to hear your opinion on this stupidity.
The problem is that people want a clear cut, yes, you know, right and wrong. And the only wrong in this situation is Hamas. The Palestinian people were unfortunately treated like pawns. And you know what? To me, I feel awful for them. But at some point, when you elect those people, even if by now they're on you by force, at some point, you know, where do you get some of the blame? If you elect a certain person, if you elect a regime like that, you know that it wasn't like they've hidden their agenda of what they're trying to do.
It's amazing.
Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Not satisfied with standard souvenir distribution, you created a device with enough kick to dislocate a mascot's shoulder.
Someone get a stretcher.
Courtside, luxury box, upper deck. Your high-powered cotton cannon makes every section the nosebleed section.
Hit the deck!
So simple, anyone can operate it. After a background check, a training course, and a 5-day waiting period.
It only shoots T-shirts.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Marksman of the Mezzanine, because we know you'll give us the shirt off your back at 180 feet per second.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis. Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
of genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Ground beef, refried beans, guacamole, cheese, sour cream, and if there's any room left, a few shreds of lettuce.
I don't see no
A culinary creation that baffles the human mind. A 12,000 calorie salad.
Acromba.
Some may ask, is your taco salad healthy? Of course it is. It's a salad, isn't it?
You can eat that deep fried country bowl.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, conquistador of the calorie. You put the feast in fiesta.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad in bed.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Arms swinging, knees bending, head bobbing to no particular rhythm. You're either dancing or you have fleas.
Call me a doctor.
As soon as you hit the dance floor, the taunts begin. Is that all you got, playa? Unfortunately, yes, that's all you got.
Pour it on now.
Who's in the house? Some guy who can't dance. That's who's in the house.
You're a star.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Happy Feet, because you really put the oogie in boogie.
Mr. Really, really bad dancer.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Boldly you patrol the line between order and anarchy, armed with only your wits, your resolve, and your tiny cardboard sign stapled to a stick.
Actually, I glued it on.
You protect professional golfers from what they fear most: idle chit-chat 200 yards away.
Stop breathing so loud now.
Because you know there's one thing this spectator sport could really do without: spectators.
Get them out.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Sultan of the Shush. We'll keep singing your praises as long as you keep telling us to shut up.
Mr. Golf Cinnamon Quiet Sign Holder.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Alrighty, we are back. It's Ellie and Izzy in the afternoon. The call-in number to join in, give us your thoughts, is 347-637-2306. Once again, 347-637-2306. And give us a follow on Twitter at Ellie and Izzy Show. And is NFL, thank the good Lord, is back. And I get one even better because my football really starts on Monday when the Hurricanes kick it off against Louisville. You New Yorkers don't know what this thing called college football is. But I get my real football back on Monday, baby.
Oh, you're terrible. You have to throw me a low blow, you bastard. Awesome. Yes, we are not a college town. We are not a college town. We don't have the Hurricanes. We don't have the Seminoles. We have the Orangemen who are like...
Oh, now you just made me cringe for saying Seminoles.
I'm dropping the Orangemen on you, baby. And if you really want to go crazy, I'm going to go with Rutgers because it's literally right over the bridge. Rutgers is not that far from where I am, but you're right. What we have to settle for is Division 10A garbage, you know, in our backyards. We're on a college town, and I am jealous of that. And people don't realize. They say, oh, New York, you have so many different sports teams, professional teams. People in New York don't understand the life and the passion that you guys that are college towns, places like in Oklahoma, like certain places where it's college football life, like Alabama, you know, LSU, like real rivalries. Like that's the kind of thing that unfortunately New Yorkers don't understand and cannot appreciate. You're a fan of the Hurricanes. Michael Irvin, even one of the Giants was a man on the U. The great Antrell Roll, he played on the U. I mean, you guys, you understand it. I mean, you got the you play in the Seminoles, and you're playing against, you know, LSU, and you got the SEC. I mean, that is the conference, the champions. I mean, you get to enjoy that. I will say this, though. I don't know what the Hurricanes look like, but if Reb Jameis Winston over there is the same quarterback he was this past year, there's a good chance they'd probably end up back in the in a championship game. What do you think, Rebbe?
Yeah, if like you said, if Jameis Winston is probably even 3/4 of what he was last year, they'll be right in that mix. But lucky for me, Hurricanes FSU, that's the game circled on that calendar, especially last year where we were close for the first half and then it got blown. So Miami FSU is always wide right. But no, other than wide right, it's always circled on my calendar, no matter which of the teams is the favorite. But this year, the Seminoles, the defending national champions, the masters of the Publix crab legs, the rapists or alleged rapists, but either way, the NFL heir apparent and Jameis Winston, they are the favorites to go back to the championship, but Miami's going to have a crack at them. And heck, I got that game highlighted, circled. The rest of the week is on suspension for that week. Miami FSU
it's basically Josh Gordon the rest of the week. Seriously, how stupid, how big an idiot does one have to be? Is Josh Gordon the new Pac-Man Jones, or has he trumped Pac-Man Jones? Please, find me a bigger moron in pro sports than Josh Gordon.
People would have made, back in the day, people would have made the Ricky Williams argument, but Ricky Williams is actually an intelligent human being who just didn't give a crap about football. Josh Gordon has nothing else but football, and so.
What do you mean? I was hotboxing. I swear I'm going to appeal it. I was in the room. I wasn't smoking a blunt. These are the things that I want to ask you, and I want give me an honest opinion, because I'm going to throw in another example of a moron that was in professional sports, a man by the name of Aaron Hernandez. Now, obviously, he's a sociopathic, murderous, a scumbag. Now, God forbid, Josh Gordon is not even in the realm of it. I mean, God forbid, I'm not comparing the two. But what I'm trying to say is from a normalcy standpoint, a guy like Josh Gordon, who has so much talent, who's led the league, who's practically outdone Calvin Johnson, who was due for a massive payday, how does his agent not go out there and find him a team of two or three individuals that literally follow him around like bees to honey and make sure he doesn't do anything stupid? Make sure he doesn't screw up his future. How? I believe, obviously, Gordon is to blame. His agent is just as to blame, because it is his job to keep his client out of trouble. And if that means you have to hire guys to sit around him and watch him like a hawk, then that is what you're supposed to do. Because, frankly, that guy is that agent's meal ticket. Josh Gordon was on pace and may still be on pace to getting a massive contract. A guy like Aaron Hernandez, what was it, 6 years, $40 million? That was his deal or something like that? At that point, he already killed people, so he was already screwed. But you would think that a guy like Josh Gordon, that his agent would be intelligent enough to put people around him that are intelligent and to keep him out of trouble, even if it costs $100,000, $200,000. In the long run, it's going to pay off massively when the guy gets a $40 million, $50 million contract and he's collecting his 10%. Am I crazy? Is the agent not partially to blame here?
Forget that. I agree with you on that, but let's go. Any NFL player who's making guaranteed money of any sort, why the hell do you not have a driver? And forget now even having a full-time driver. Freaking Uber the stupid thing. Every other person is doing it. Why the hell wouldn't the NFL start? Frankly, most NFL players, if you call an Uber and you get in the car, they're not going to realize who the hell you are. So why not do it? I mean, the rest of the population is doing it. You, who have a lot more riding on literally your ride, should be doing it. And if I was a guy who was making good money, you know, whatever we're going to define that, but enough, hire a guy for $25,000-$30,000 a year. You can find plenty of people to do it, and that's it. He is your driver. And the fact that these stars don't have it is just stupid.
Dante Stallworth wishes he had one. But guess what? The fact of the matter is that these guys may think that they're just smarter than the system, that they can beat the system. Hey, I'm not that drunk, but even if I am that drunk, what's going to happen? I'll get pulled over by a cop? Hey, I'll flash my NFL credentials. Hey, buddy, I was your tight end last week, and I put up 14 points for you. Now, that's one way to think. Or if the guy had a really bad week, he could think this way. If the cop pulls me over and he says, jerk, you made me lose my fantasy playoff game, I'm writing you up big time, then you're screwed. The point is, these guys think...
That would so be the move.
I mean,
that would
it's
so
a double-edged
the
sword, baby.
Fantasy. You screwed me on fantasy.
That's it. It's life, man. It's fantasy football. I mean, you got to look at it that way. Like what happens if, like, Jimmy Graham crapped the bed and he gets pulled over drunk driving, and the guy that happens to be doing it, the cop had Jimmy Graham on his fantasy team. So he's already pissed off. And now he can really screw him because his brother-in-law gets to laugh at him for the rest of the year with the trophy. He's going to make Jimmy Graham's life miserable. So here's the key. The key is, if you're going to be a drunk driving idiot and a schmuck and whatever, you're going to do your thing, you better put up statistics every goddamn week, because that's the only way you're getting out of it. If you have a bad week, don't drive drunk, because it's going to cost you. Or, of course, if the cop that pulls you over doesn't even know what the hell football is, then it don't really matter. But at the end of the day, my stance on drunk driving, I think to begin with, it's completely asinine. And yes, these schmucks should have drivers, because for what they're worth and what they're going to make, the NFL did institute a policy of a phone number where you call it and they will come and pick you up, obviously, because the NFL is a multi-billion dollar industry and they don't need the bad press. Speaking of which, there was actually a player who named Josh Brent who played for the Cowboys. He was involved in a crash with a practice squad player, a linebacker, unfortunately was killed a few years ago, and now Brent is eligible to return. But supposedly the NFL is trying to block that. They want to suspend them at this point indefinitely for it. What do you think about something along those lines? Should he play or should he not?
The problem is with the NFL, and this was also with the Ray Rice issue. Anytime we demand more of the NFL than the legal system does, I mean, the NFL should not be held to a higher standard than the legal system. If somebody's not guilty or has done his time in the legal system, there is no reason he shouldn't be able to play in the NFL. And in all honesty, a lot of these guys have stuff there that they've done that maybe not even we know about. But, you know, these people are not role models and examples, and most of them, you know, have stuff in their closets. So, you know, why should... Who are we to judge that one thing is more grievous than the other? I mean, you're splitting hairs at this point. If the guy did his time, if he got suspended already, let him back.
Okay. Listen, I agree with that. I agree with that. I think it's he did his time. He went through the process, and even the family of the person that he killed supposedly accepted his apology. And I guess you move forward. Now, the thing with Ray Rice, though, is slightly different. I mean, obviously, you can't compare a murder to an assault, but it is domestic violence. It is a man hitting a woman. It's pulling a drunk woman out of an elevator. Like, I mean, it's the NFL should have done more. I believe they should have done more. I truly do. It's such a bad example. He should have been suspended for at least 6 games. It really set a bad it set a very bad precedent. I think Goodell should have done more. And I'm not going to say I'm not the only one, but many people agree with me on that. What he did was on camera. Many people have seen it. And I know you said that they're not role models. And I understand that. I get that. But the fact is that our youth watch them and respect them and try to emulate them. And when they see something like that happen, it has a lasting effect on them. And when they see, he was suspended 2 games, so he lost a couple of bucks. He's going to play 14 more games, and he's going to make a killing. So to them, I don't feel it was a big enough punishment. It wasn't a big enough slap. It really wasn't. It's not even so much the Ravens did whatever internal things they did that we don't know, but the NFL, Goodell should have taken a bigger stance on it. I really think he missed the boat there. I really do.
Let's remember, Ray Rice and his wife met with Roger Goodell. Now, there's obviously things that were said in that meeting that we were not privy to. Now, let's stop pretending like we have the whole picture. And also take into account the fact that the law didn't do anything. There were no charges pressed. They're allowed to charge him even without the wife wanting to charge him. There's a reason they didn't charge him. We should not expect the NFL to deem out and met out more punishment than the law does. Remember, it looks really bad because we saw the video of him pulling her out of the elevator. But we have no idea what actually went on. Domestic abuse is awful, but it's not the end-all, be-all. If there were things that led up to that, who knows what, you know, if she started. I mean, there are many factors that we don't have a clue. So to pretend like we're this all-seeing, all-knowing being that could give a judgment on this case and we know everything that's right.
No, but we're
discussing a little bit of this.
But it's what we saw. It's what we witnessed. We witnessed something horrible. That's what I'm trying to tell you. It's not.
No, no, no. We witnessed a minute of the end of a long event of something that we have no clue that ended up being horrible.
But it was the worst part. Right. It's the worst part of it. We got to see the worst part. I don't know what went on in the thing. That's not of concern to me. What is of concern to me is that an NFL player dragged his girlfriend out drunk by her head. There's no condoning it. And I get what you're saying. The authorities did not press charges. And we don't know why. We have no clue why. But I know what I saw, and I know what children saw and what people saw. And it sets a really bad example. They went with 2 games. I think it should have been more. I think he should have set an example. It wasn't so much for Ray Rice. It was for the people out there that looked up to him and looked at him, and it's for people around to realize, hey, just because you're an NFL player, just because you're a famous person, doesn't mean you get away with something as serious as domestic abuse. And unfortunately, domestic abuse is a lot more serious in around our communities. People don't realize it. There's a lot of that going on. Now, I get what you're saying. You're 100% right in the fact that the authorities did not press charges, and the fact that they didn't does speak volumes. But I'm speaking from what I saw. I'm speaking based on that video. And that video, clear as day, showed him dragging her out of that elevator like that. And I can't think of any reason why. It's not condoning the behavior, but not pressing the issue, not getting angry about seeing something like that, because frankly, it was disgusting to see that. But I do see your point, and I guess on that note, we'll have to agree to disagree. Now, tell me something. What is your opinion? Because we've been talking about football for a while now. What's your opinion of your boy Ryan Tannehill? Is he going to be anything? Is he getting better? Are they looking for Jay Fiedler, Ray Lucas, or Brock Hewitt, or any one of these other scumbags to come in and replace?
Oh, I sure as hell hope we're not looking for Jay Fiedler or Ray Mucus. Because Fiedler was better is not the right word, but he was a more serviceable quarterback than people realize and gave him credit for. You know, especially in this, you know, quarterback, you don't necessarily need a dominant quarterback. I mean, in today's day, NFL, you do, but back in the day when Fiedler was, it was in the days where the Bucs were winning the Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer.
No, no, no. You don't say Trent Dilfer winning a Super Bowl, you bastard. Not to me.
Right. So, you know, back in those days when Jay Fiedler was around, that was, you know, a serviceable quarterback was what you needed in the league, and he was that. But now where you need a good quarterback, I mean, Ryan Tannehill, I have no clue how he's going to be. He's shown flashes of being really good, and then he's shown flashes of how's this going to change. I mean, he still has yet to hit the deep ball with Mike Wallace, which is a little troubling. And people are freaking out that he's not practicing it with him. But, you know, this was a great, great quote. They asked Joe Philbin about why they're not spending extra time, you know, just Tannehill and Wallace practicing it. Philbin said, we're not going to throw our player out there and give him more reps than we feel is necessary and stretch his body. And he said that, you know, the only way for them to start hitting that ball and catching the ball is for them to start catching the ball. I mean, keep throwing, you know, you're talking about a quarterback who has played in the NFL, a veteran wide receiver, sitting there practicing it a whole bunch of times is not going to be the thing that makes it click. It's just got to click. And hopefully it does. It is nice to have Bill Lazor, who was, people mistakenly say, the offensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles last year. Well, technically in title, that was correct. He wasn't calling plays or anything. So they do have Bill Lazor. He's going to bring some sort of fast-paced offense to the Dolphins, although they haven't shown it yet. But, you know, to me, even more so than the offense, the fast-paced offense was, he made Nick Foles into a borderline Pro Bowl quarterback. I mean, so if Tannehill's going to turn the corner, this is the year. He's shown flashes, especially this year in the preseason. And, you know, the first week of the season against New England in 2 weeks is going to be not the test because, you know, while every NFL game is important, the first few are not live or die. This has got to be the year where he takes the jump. Otherwise, the Dolphins will once again be looking for a quarterback and probably a new head coach and possibly a GM. And, you know, Dan Marino's on board now, which could make things more interesting. You know, it never hurts. Or let's rephrase that. It shouldn't hurt to have a Hall of Fame quarterback who's had his hand in the league in some way, shape, or form since he retired. You know, granted it was just in a TV role, but it shouldn't hurt to have him around. But if they don't turn a corner this year, and that's going to be strictly on the shoulders of Ryan Tannehill, it's probably another gutting of the coaching staff and possibly GM, although he's had some nice draft picks so far this year. But this year's got to be the year that they turn the corner.
Well, I'll tell you this. I definitely think there's one great thing about Dan Marino coming over to the Dolphins, and the great thing about it is that he can get those linemen to lose weight with his Nutrisystem commercials. I definitely think it'll have a great effect on the fat men. It's too bad Jonathan Martin's not playing for him. He could probably help him lose 40 pounds and maybe some of that, though. I had to drop John Martin's name. You dropped Dilfer, I had to bring the line. I'll take Richie Incognito for $5,000, please.
I'm still upset that they dropped him. There's no reason the Dolphins ever should have dropped Richie Incognito.
Question, does he go back to the Rams? Highly unlikely. You think him and Michael Sam would get along in the locker room? Probably not going to happen. But guess what?
Well, I know if they were in the same locker room, ESPN would report if they stepped into the same 4 yards of each other or exactly when Richie Incognito was in the shower and Michael Sam was in the shower. ESPN is making – they're talking about how we're making it a story while making it a story that we're making it a story.
It's amazing. It is – dude, it is bloody hilarious, and I'm completely on board with you. And I will say this, and I said this from the beginning when they talked about him. Right in the beginning when he came out, I said, bravo, God bless Michael Sam. I'm pro-gay. I think it's totally cool that he's man enough or, you know, to come out and in a sport that is so macho, to be so open and honest about his sexuality. That's where it ends. That is where the story ends. It's not about Michael Sam making the team. It's not about a guy drafted 250th in a 255-player draft. We're not talking about a guy that went 36th overall. We're talking about a guy who was drafted 5 picks away from Mr. Irrelevant. There is no reason that it should still be talked about the way that it is. And frankly, I don't think Jeff Fisher is enjoying it. I don't think the team is. It's taking away from the team. Let me ask you a question. If they took a poll right now, what is the bigger story? Them having to start Sean Hill over Sam Bradford, because Bradford's career arguably might be over at this point because he's going to have chronic knees. So is it Sean Hill or is it Michael Sam making the team? Let's get a grip on reality. It's amazing the fact that he was drafted, that he's on a team, but that's it. That is it. He wasn't some highly touted player. Move on.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't even be amazing that he was drafted. If he deserved to be drafted, the fact that he got drafted shouldn't be amazing. And a lot of this rhetoric is stuff that we are perpetuating. And you know what? Like you said, that should have been it, the end of the story, but it wasn't. You know, and I love the people after the fact trying to make it sound like Michael Sam dropped because he was gay. Michael Sam dropped because he's a 6th-round talent. That is it. We all know football teams. If there is somebody who's going to make them better, they will overlook anything. And I am – you will not convince me that one thing they wouldn't overlook is being a player being gay, because they've overlooked, like we just discussed, domestic abuse. They've overlooked murders. They've overlooked a lot of different things. If he was really that damn good – they would overlook it. It's a question of talent. And you know what? Let's get over it. Let's move out. And for Michael Sam, I said this right away. It was the most brilliant thing ever. The even bigger marketing scheme, and we're going to talk about this tomorrow, even a more brilliant marketing coup than LeBron James going back to Cleveland was Michael Sam coming. Was Michael Sam coming out as gay? Because if I'm a mediocre, at best, 6th or 7th round pick and might not get drafted, all of a sudden he came out as gay. Well, all the talk became, oh, he's got to be drafted. So that was, you will be very hard to convince me, not at least partially marketing based. I have zero problem with it. I think it's stupid that it's an issue even in the first place. It should be strictly based on whether you play or not and whether you can help our team or not. But we all know that that's not the reality of the league. And that the case being that that's not the reality of the league, Michael Sam doing this was a – you will not convince me that it was not at least partially a marketing spin on it.
I'm not going to lie. I am not going to lie. If it was a marketing scheme, which I'm not going to disagree with you on, it might be one of the most brilliant possible schemes ever brought to the table. I think it's brilliant. And his agent or whoever advised him should be crowned. That is assuming that he gets signed by the team and he gets a contract and so on and so forth. But I as much as I want to talk about this, you made a very quick statement, and then you quickly jumped back to Michael Sam. And we get to this tomorrow.
Because we don't have enough time right now to get enough to properly deal with the LeBron
tomorrow.
James thing. And that's
tomorrow
all I'm going to say.
We are talking.
Because the LeBron James thing has a lot of pieces to it, and it's you've got to have some sophistication, which I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt that you do when we discuss it tomorrow. But let me switch over to a great piece on Deadspin.
Let me just say one thing. Remember, you said
No. I'm cutting you off. I'm cutting you off. We're going to go stick with the NFL on Deadspin Friday because the New York teams can never do anything that doesn't involve a circus around them. Deadspin is reporting that the Jets are sad that Michael Vick is cool with being the backup.
Guess what, Eli? I am not a Jet fan. I am a very happy New York Giant fan. And yes, the Jets are a circus of failure. And you know where it starts? It starts with the man with the greatest porno name in history, Woody Johnson. Because Woody Johnson doesn't know what it means to cut off Rex Ryan like the end of his phallus, like to give him a circumcision, get rid of him, chop him off, dump Rex Ryan, dump the coaching staff, start over. How in the hell, can I ask you a question? How in the hell did the Jets put any confidence into Geno Smith when they go out a year after he's drafted and bring in Michael Vick to spell him? Do you understand what the Jets did? They basically said as follow. They said, Geno, we don't believe in anything that you can do, and we're convinced anything you can do, Vick can do better. So at some point in the third or fourth game, you're going to suck. We're going to bring in Vick, and then Vick will be concussed or break a rib or break his nutsack, and he'll be out for a month, and then we'll bring you back in, and then you'll suck for another four games, and then we'll bring back Vick. They are a never-ending circus. Yes, not my New York Giants. My New York Giants know how to do it, and they damn well do it right, baby. They know how to run a franchise. They are at the top of their game, even though I believe they're a 9-7 team at best. When they're 9-7 or 8-8, they've got that chance to run right through the playoffs into that beautiful Super Bowl and snatch victory from the jaws of the Patriots or, of course, the Broncos or whoever else the hell Vegas has. I don't even know who they have at the time. Maybe they have the Broncos winning it. But that being said, the Jets are one of the biggest jokes as far as franchises go in sport. And by the way, just a quick rumor. There was talk, and get ready for this. There was talk of Mark Sanchez possibly going to the Rams and starting for them. What do you think of Mark Sanchez starting in the NFL?
I think it's worth a shot because I think Mark Sanchez could be a serviceable NFL quarterback without all the New York crap and the New York pressure and the nonsense that New York brings out. I think, you know, the Giants obviously are not as bad as the Jets, but any person who plays in New York, especially the quarterback position, you're almost doomed from failure, especially, you know, if you're not a great talent like a, you know, Eli Manning was. But I didn't mean that as in he's not. He's still a top probably 10 quarterback for sure, but, you know, there was years where he was, you know, the cushion that Giants fans gave Eli Manning has quickly been removed, as we expected from New Yorkers always do. But it's hard to make it in New York in that prime position. And Mark Sanchez, there is potential to be a serviceable NFL quarterback. And when you need somebody to fill in like they do because of the Bradford injury, I don't know that you bring him in and anoint him the starter, but why not give him a shot?
Well, why not? I watched him play in New York, and granted, you're right. In New York, there is pressure nowhere else to win. In St. Louis, they won't give a crap because they frankly haven't given a crap about that team since the greatest show on turf. With, of course, the amazing four receivers who basically could burn anybody, and Kurt Warner, all he had to do was throw the damn ball up in the air, and it was either Corey Holt, Isaac Bruce, Oz Hakim, or Ricky Prawl coming down with it, and the great Marshall Faulk in the backfield. So they don't really give a crap about winning football in St. Louis. So, yes, you're right. But there's something about Sanchez, there's something about his demeanor that I never took to. I never liked it. He lacks, like, moxie. He lacks that thing. It's like even with Manning, people look at Eli Manning and they go,
he shrugs his shoulders. He looks retarded, and I get that. He has that retarded kind of look, but you see him showing some kind of emotion. He exudes I suck so much crap type of a personality. I don't see the confidence in the guy. He just doesn't impress me, man. It's something about him that just not, it just doesn't stand out. And that's why, I mean, listen, you want to give him a shot, no problem. Send him out to St. Louis. Him and Sean Hill can play for a team that's going to go 6-10 or 5-11. And Michael Sam will have three special teams tackles all year, and we'll talk about how amazing his form was on each tackle on special teams when the team's getting murdered. It'll be very important to talk about. But yeah.
Oh, my God. I wish ESPN would jump up to talking about his form when he's tackling. We're going to talk
John
about
Brinkus.
It anytime he's showered.
Dude, John Brinkus. John Brinkus of Sports Science will talk about Michael Sam's ability to tackle. It'll be epic, dude. So listen, he's in a three-point stance. He turns his hips. He drives his shoulders into the guy's back and lays them on the floor, and that's the end of the party. The point is, they give a crap about Michael Sam, and I'm not letting you go, by the way, about that LeBron, but I want to tell our listeners for tomorrow, you better damn well tune into the show because we're going to be talking LeBron James with Eli and Izzy, Eli being from Miami, Florida, a man who has enjoyed the various championships that he, as I said, got to experience and got to enjoy for the couple of years that he did. And now, unfortunately, his boy Wonder jumped ship. And tomorrow we will discuss this. Not today. I will leave it with that jab. Eli, is there a rebuttal?
Like I said, this is not something that we talk about in 10 minutes. That's why I cut us off for today. But we got 2 hours tomorrow, and hopefully that'll be enough. If not, we're, you know, like you said, it's going to be fun with me and you every day, 4 to 6 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio, and we got plenty of time to discuss LeBron, but 2 minutes left. We're almost through this first ride, first day back. Good to be back. It'll be fun. Once again, reminding you all, 4 to 6, tune in Monday through Thursday for me and Izzy just basically doing what we did today, shooting the breeze, talking a bunch of topics of sports, might get sidetracked on other things. But, yeah, it's LeBron. I've got a lot to say, and there's a lot of different things involved there, and you're going to have to hear me out on different levels and realize that certain things are standalone and certain things that seemingly contradict with each other to me, I don't. And the one thing we can point out that it makes the regular season more interesting again for the Eastern Conference teams, and we'll discuss more at length tomorrow why that is. And also we're going to bring up, because it's tomorrow the NBA heavy, how J.R. Smith, once again, running his mouth on how he's going to be the greatest shooter in the history of the NBA when he's not even at best in the top 50 of the category that he might have a shot at actually saying that about. Izzy, 30 seconds left. Been a pleasure. We'll talk again tomorrow. Any last parting thoughts?
Yes, parting thoughts are, folks, you are listening. I know you're listening into us. You better come back tomorrow, because if you're big NBA buffs, you're going to want to hear the opinion of a hardcore Miami Heat fan and, of course, a semi-knowledgeable New York Knicks fan. Guys, tune in tomorrow, same time, 4 to 6, Blog Talk Radio. If you want to call us in at that time, 347-637-2306. Eli, it's been a pleasure, and I'll see you all tomorrow.
Adios. Bye-bye.